Hello, this is Perry, and you're listening to the Chemist's Corner podcast for Monday, October 11th, 2010. Welcome to Chemist's Corner. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, and when I'm not creating new cosmetic formulas, I'm trying to play the ukulele. Chemist Corner is a podcast about cosmetic science and is broadcast to help educate, entertain, and inspire current and future cosmetic scientists. The information and opinions discussed on Chemist Corner are those of the hosts and the guests alone. They do not necessarily reflect those of any past, present, or future employers. All right, on today's show, we've got an interview with Allison Contour, a cosmetic chemist who owns her own company. We'll talk about how she got started and what it's like running your own personal care products company. Before we get to the news, I wanted to welcome all the new members of the Complete Cosmetic Chemist Training Program and alert you that it has closed for new students. I'm not sure when we will open again, but it won't be for another number of months. You can still get on the waiting list by going to chemistcorner.com and clicking on the Training Program tab. As always, feel free to leave a comment on the blog if you have any questions. Now, some cosmetic industry news. Here's a case where marketing seems to be beating science, at least when it comes to winning the hearts and minds of personal care consumers. According to a recent online survey by Data Monitor, 52% of consumers believe that cosmetics and personal care products that contain natural ingredients were healthier than those that were made with synthetic ingredients. The study also showed that only 37% of those consumers believed that the natural products were equally effective as synthetics. So basically, people thought that natural products were safer or healthier, and the synthetic ones actually work better. And the survey also shows that even though people claim that natural ingredients are healthier, they are still going to buy products that work. As a cosmetic chemist, you are not able to sacrifice performance for potential safety. First, I just want to mention a couple of things that are significant flaws in this study. To start, they do not define natural, so the consumers that responded could have very different meanings about what they think is natural or not. Next, they've also limited it to people who are online, and in my experience, the online audience is not necessarily reflective of the population as a whole. It just makes me wonder what the results would be if they looked at the population as a whole. It's been my experience online that people who are online, or at least feel compelled to write stuff online, generally tend to be more of the natural is better crowd. So I'm not exactly surprised that they would find that in this data. I'm not sure that that is true in the general population, not people who would do online surveys. But if we accept that the survey is a reflection of the population in general, I'm curious to see how cosmetic chemists will deal with it. You might be inclined to bristle at the non-scientific conclusions that consumers are coming to. You might even, as I do, find it sad that there is such fear of synthetic chemicals given the improvements that we've seen in our standard of living because of synthetic chemicals. Marketers will no doubt start asking cosmetic chemists to come up with more naturally based products. This is a huge challenge because the reason that synthetic ingredients are used is because they work better than natural alternatives. From a cosmetic chemist standpoint, though, this news does provide some new opportunities to develop naturally based formulas that perform as well as synthetically based ones. But perhaps an even bigger challenge than coming up with those formulas is coming up with some definition of what natural means. There is no universal definition, so this becomes an added challenge for a cosmetic chemist, because if you want to come up with a naturally based formula, who decides what natural is? I found this report published in the Society of Toxicology last year, which asked the question, are chemicals killing us? This seems relevant, especially considering the survey that I just talked about. In this survey, they did a survey of over 900 members of the Society of Toxicology, you know, the people who assess toxic risks in the environment. And they had some interesting results. The major findings relevant to cosmetic chemists were only 26% believe that cosmetics pose a significant health risk, which means 74% of the toxicologists don't see a problem with cosmetics. Only 10% believe organic or natural products are inherently safer, which, as we saw in the last story, is vastly different from what consumers think. 69% believe that chemicals do not need to be regulated according to the precautionary principle. Now, if you don't know, the precautionary principle is a principle in which an ingredient can be banned even if there isn't evidence that is unsafe. There just has to be a suggestion that maybe it's unsafe, and the precautionary principle would say, well, if it might be unsafe, then you shouldn't use it, regardless of whether you have data, whether it's unsafe or not. Now, mind you, these opinions of toxicologists are not based on their own opinions. It's based on science. Consumers are based on, I guess, what the media tells them or their own feelings. Interestingly, only 9% of toxicologists think that bisphenol A is a high risk, and only 11% see phthalates as a high risk. No doubt the general public also sees these differently. For a comparison, 26% of toxicologists see sunlight as posing a significant health risk. We'll provide a link to the study in the show notes if you'd like to see all the conclusion. What I think is important for cosmetic chemists to realize is that the majority of scientists who are in the best position to determine the risk of synthetic ingredients are in general agreement that cosmetics do not pose a significant risk to people. So the question is, how do we as cosmetic chemists convince people of what the science says? Unfortunately, I don't have an answer to this, except to do this podcast, write blog posts about it, and answer media questions whenever I get the opportunity. I've never met a cosmetic chemist who wants to hurt consumers by using dangerous chemicals. It saddens me to think that more than 50% of consumers think we do. The number of people I've known who work on products that they've never tried has always amazed me. They miss so much when they don't have direct experience with a product. Perhaps it's understandable if you are not in the target market for your product, but anyone can safely use most any product, and that information you'll learn from the experience is invaluable. So here are 5 reasons that I believe cosmetic chemists should be trying every cosmetic formula you work on. Number 1, you're going to learn the most important characteristics. When I first started working on the cosmetic industry, I was making hair care products, and while I always use shampoos, I rarely use conditioners. It seemed like a complete waste of time. But when I was given the task to make a new hair conditioner formula, I needed to figure out the most important characteristics. You can read about all of these things like slip and spreadability and hair conditioning, but it doesn't really make sense until you try it. After using conditioner a few times, I figured out what these terms meant and why they were important, and this gave me a much better basis for evaluating new formulas and allowed me to make something that was better. The bottom line is, if you don't try a formula, you can't make it better. Number 2 is that you can build your powers of observation. Many of the formulas you work on are ones that you've tried all your life, but most of the time you will use them without thinking. Your mind has become dulled to the experience. When you try a product thoughtfully, you can build your powers of observation and discover all sorts of details you never noticed. For example, you might start to notice the ease at which your hands slip while applying a lotion, or the length of time it takes to work into your skin. You might notice the bubble density of your body wash or shampoo. In short, using a product frequently and mindfully can make you an excellent evaluator. The bottom line is, you can't make formulas better if you don't know what to change. Number 3, figure out formula problems. Sometimes your market research data will come back suggesting that there is a problem with your formula. This will be surprising to you because companies do not like to field consumer tests with formulas they know will exhibit problems. Even if all your lab testing shows your formula is good, there may be some subtle things you miss if you don't try it. For instance, the product might sting or cause another unpleasant sensation during use. There might be a foul odor, which you can only smell when it's exposed to skin or hair or moisture. You might feel tiny particles that interfere with the experience. So, trying products helps to identify these unseen problems. Number 4, you can learn the effects of raw materials. A great benefit to trying your formulas is that you quickly learn how different raw materials change the experience. Again, you can try to read about these things, but until you actually experience it in the formula, your knowledge isn't really useful. Every cosmetic chemist should have a standard blank formula, which they can incorporate a new raw material and try to determine the effects. This is the best way to learn. Even if the raw material isn't meant to affect performance, it can have a subtle impact that you would never notice unless you used it. The bottom line is that the fastest way to learn about a raw material is to use it in a formula. And finally, trying your products helps to inspire new product ideas. When you think about the different products while using it, you might start to notice common problems. For example, maybe all the skin lotions you feel are too greasy, or they don't last long enough. You should write down these observations and try to come up with new solutions. Product brainstorming while you're in the act of using the product leads to much more useful ideas than sitting in an office just trying to think. If you're not going to try these formulas, who will? As a formulator, you should take pride in everything you make, and if your formula is not good enough for you, how can it possibly be good enough for anyone else? Allison Contour is the founder of 100% Organic Simple Nutrition, a nonprofit consultancy for the advancement of organic health and wellness, with a specialty in organic vegetarian diet. She is also the president of Smell No Evil, a company that creates bulk skincare supplies, including product bases, raw materials, and more focused on organic and eco-friendly skincare markets. Welcome to the program, Allison.
Thank you for having me today, Perry.
No problem. I'm an avid reader of your blog and follow you on various social media networks. And I was interested in your work as a formulator because you're often publishing formulas and DIY formulas for people who follow your blog, and you're also a founder of a company. So I think cosmetic chemists would be interested in hearing how you got started. So why don't we just start right there? How did you get started in the cosmetic industry?
Well, it's actually kind of a funny story. I'm not a classically trained chemist. I refer to myself often as a kitchen chemist because that's how I started. And it began actually in childhood. My mother made sure that we knew how to cook at a very early age. So I discovered that that was the only way I could learn how to do fractions was by cooking. And then that expounded into science. And I can remember in grade school doing multiple science fairs, all different types of topics. But the area where I seemed to excel the most was in natural dyes. I wasn't using them for food. I was actually using them for fabric at the time.
These are like the food colorings and things?
Similar to food coloring, but I was actually using plant material to create dyes that I believe probably 9 or 10 years old. So I was using things like, you know, black tea and sassafras root, and I think some of the other things I used was like red cabbage and beets mm-hmm. and things like that. And my science fair project went all the way to state, and everybody was all excited about it. And I just thought I was doing something cool. I didn't really care about the whole recognition part, but my parents were pretty impressed with that.
Just as a clarification, you're located in Ohio?
Correct. Yes. Currently, I'm just south of Cleveland, Ohio, but I grew up a little bit farther south of central Ohio near Muskingum University.
Yeah, you know, we have international listeners, so just to give them a sense of where you are.
Yeah, I'm in the heartland, or so they say.
Yes.
Lots of country around here. So yeah, I mean, I grew up on a farm and we had those kinds of things available to us. And my parents were so impressed with how I did at the science fair that they enrolled me in all kinds of summer courses at the local college, which was Muskingum College. And I started dabbling a little bit in a chemistry lab, and I had never actually been in a real lab before other than in the kitchen. And, you know, I blew my share of things up and made my share of mistakes, but it had a lasting impression on me. And I knew that at some point in my life, I wanted to do something where I was working in a lab. And my life took a drastic change from there. My parents divorced when I was young. I stayed in Southern Ohio. The rest of my family transferred up here just south of Cleveland. And I had to make a decision about what I wanted to do as far as my education was concerned. So in my teens, I transferred schools and graduated from a college prep school here in the area that really focused on science and math and all of the things that I wasn't really interested in anything else besides the science, but I had to take everything else too. So I focused more at that point in time, again, on chemistry, but more biology was the direction that I seemed to be going at that point. And then when I went to college, I actually started in pre-med. And the first time that I ever saw blood, I freaked out. And I knew at that point that it just wasn't for me. I loved anatomy. I loved anatomy lab, but it was just not the right science for me. So I dabbled a bit and changed my major several times and actually ended up in nutrition. So I was in a lot of chemistry classes, a lot of organic chemistry classes that I loathed. And I found myself most at home, though, in the lab. And I always felt more at home in the lab, mixing things and doing a lot of trial and error. And that's where my love of science really took off. And I ended up dropping out of college. I never finished, mostly because the structure just wasn't for me. I know that sounds odd because scientists are normally pretty structured people, but the actual college structure was not really for me. So I left and finished my nutrition degree online. And years later, I found myself back here in science. It's not what I did for a long time, but I found an opportunity to get back into it and took it.
So how did you learn to formulate products?
Most of the learning that I had, I have to say, is trial and error. I'm a visual person, so to read a formula to me is the most boring thing you could possibly do. Mm-hmm. It's necessary, but to me, it's really not an exciting thing to do. And it would probably put me to sleep if I sat and read formulating books all night long. But what I would do is when I wanted to make something for myself, when I wanted to make a product for myself, I would look at products that were already available on the market, read through the ingredients list, and then get rid of the things that I didn't understand. So if there was a product I couldn't pronounce, or if there was something I didn't know, if I wasn't really sure what it was, I would just eliminate it, work with the ingredients that I knew. And through trial and error, I found out, you know, a lot of times why those other ingredients were in there. And at that point, I think I bought my first cosmetic dictionary. So that's when my research of some of the more unusual names began.
Did you have lab space right away when you were making batches?
I did not have lab space right away. And actually, how my business started is kind of an interesting story. I purchased an existing business. So when I came into the skincare industry, someone else was already running the business I ended up purchasing. And most of what I learned about what they sold, I learned from the owner of the company. So anything that she was manufacturing at that point in time, she taught me how to manufacture, or roughly how to manufacture. And I learned how to do a lot of things wrong through that. Because she was not a chemist. And I learned the hard way that a lot of the things that she was doing were not correct, such as not using preservatives and not using any sorts of fillers or anything like that. She had a very limited product line. And it was frustrating in the beginning because I knew that we wanted to carry a full product line. And the way that we were formulating, we couldn't. So I had to educate myself and learn what else was available, what else was out there, and how to make it, because I couldn't afford to hire somebody to make it for me.
As a business owner, are you also the primary formulator and production person?
Yes, actually, our business is 5 years old under my ownership. We are a partnership. My business partner lives in San Diego. And since it's a long distance business relationship, she handles most of the marketing. I handle most of the grunt work, which I'm happy with. I would prefer to be in the lab than out knocking on doors. So it's a mutually beneficial relationship, and that provides me more time. I call it playing. I mean, I know it's supposed to be work, but I call it playing. And consequently, because our business has grown to where it has, we're now teaching other people how to do those things to kind of free up some of my time to do the other things that are required to run a business.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of formulas have you put together?
The formulas that have actually been created from scratch by me are all of our body scrub formulas, a couple of our lotion formulas, but mostly the body scrub formulas. That's where I'm most at home. It was more wanting to create a product for myself, I think, is where that came out of. We had a product that was really popular when I first took over the business, but it was oily and greasy and leaked all over the place, and we had horrible times in transit. UPS damaged pallet upon pallet upon pallet of this stuff because it didn't have any structure to it, and part of it was we weren't packaging it properly either. So I would say at least 24 months of the 5 years that I've owned this business, I spent formulating and reformulating and reformulating and reformulating our body's formula until I got something that was perfect for me, and it made a huge difference, not just in sales of the product, but also in transport.
Your products are mostly, you call them organic or eco-friendly. How did you get started with that sort of field of developing cosmetics?
Actually, the eco-friendly portion of it, I refer to most of our products as eco-friendly because we don't carry anything that's certified. We're not a certified organic facility, mm-hmm. and we're not a certified organic handler. So I prefer to use the term eco-friendly. I try to steer away from green because it doesn't really have any definition to anyone outside of the green industry.
Right.
I got into the eco-friendly industry through nutrition. When I first started dealing with diet, I switched to a completely organic diet. I've been a vegetarian, I think, since I was 13 or 14 years old. So I've been a vegetarian for a long time, but it wasn't until I transferred to Northern Ohio that I learned there was this organic movement. And it wasn't huge by any standard. When I first moved to the area, I think we had two health food stores. So it wasn't a huge movement, but there was a movement.
Mm-hmm.
I met some people who knew a lot about organic food and organic supplements and working out and living a clean lifestyle. And so, I mean, I was hardcore. I had, you know, organic clothes, organic bed, organic pillows, organic sheets, you name it. Everything was organic. Filtered water, you know, like a 15-step water filtration system with carbon filters and UV and the whole nine yards. So I was hardcore when I first got into the organic industry, and there weren't a lot of options available at that point in time. I think the big players in the cosmetic industry anyway were probably Jason Naturals and Aubrey Organics, Dr. Bronner's, of course. But there really weren't many choices available. And the choices that were available, sadly, weren't that great.
Yeah.
I mean, they got the job done, but coming from someone who had used standard skincare, going into something that didn't have a lot of those things that give standard skincare its skin feel and its smell and its texture and the way that it looks, once those things were removed, it was a learning experience. And obviously, I mean, that industry's come a long way, but back then there wasn't a lot of choice.
Yeah. Have you found that the raw material suppliers are the ones that have stepped up their game to provide more eco-friendly ingredients?
Absolutely. Because in the beginning, there really wasn't a lot of choice. I mean, sure, there was shea butter for a long time, but it wasn't until recently that a lot of the other vegetable butters started coming on the market, and wax alternatives, you know, your beeswax and jojoba wax and esters and those kinds of things have become more readily available. Not necessarily that they didn't exist before, but they've become more mainstream. They're being pushed harder.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed in the trade shows especially that there seems to be a driving force behind a lot of those natural and organic both raw materials.
And preservatives are always a challenge when you're talking about natural cosmetics. What's your feeling on how you preserve formulas?
Well, I absolutely believe that preservation 100% needs to exist. From trial and error, obviously, we've had situations where we discovered that what we thought was working wasn't. We learned the importance of challenge testing products. all of the things that you don't, I mean, if you haven't been trained as a classic chemist, and if you haven't spent a lot of time focusing on these types of products, those things sort of escape you. And unless you have an experience, a hands-on experience with it, you often don't learn the importance of the most important things. And preservatives, to me, are one of the most important things in skincare. I know there are a lot of people who disagree with me. There are a lot of people who fight me on it. But it's a necessary evil. And it's funny because all these years of people arguing about what preservative should be banned and how preservatives cause cancer and preservatives do this and preservatives are evil. You know, I was in the farmer's market the other day, and they had fresh green peas on a styrofoam tray,
uh-huh.
wrapped in plastic wrap. And when I read the ingredients on the back, they contained fresh peas, water, sodium chloride, FD&C blue number one, FD&C yellow number five, and parabens in peas. I mean, and people are concerned about putting lotion on their skin that has a paraben in it when they're eating them. They're getting them in the drug supply. They're getting them in the food supply. I don't think people realize just how prevalent they are in other areas of life, even in the water that you drink. I mean, there's so much contamination just in water, and we bathe and drink that. So
yeah, absolutely. How did you decide that starting your own business was for you?
It's funny that you ask that, because I've always known that owning my own business was something that I wanted to do. And I don't know if it's bad 80s movies mentality, but I remember watching 9 to 5 with Dolly Parton and some of the other 80s movies, Secret to My Success, and those kinds of movies were very prevalent when I was growing up. And I always had this mentality that I was going to be this hardcore boss woman, you know, cracking a whip and smacking people around. And granted, I worked in a lot of different industries, and I worked for a lot of different types of people between getting into the workforce and becoming a business owner. And it wasn't until someone that I lived with owned a larger company here in the Cleveland area. And after watching them deal with all of the things that you have to deal with on a daily basis, I started rethinking that. I started thinking, you know, there's just way too much involved in this that people don't realize and people don't understand, like employees and like, you know, taxes and laws and occupancy permits and things that you just kind of take for granted. You don't ever walk into a business, sign a check, and take over. There's a lot more involved in it. So I lived with someone for a long time that ran a business. And from that, I learned what not to do and what to do. Mm-hmm. And eventually the industry I worked in before was actually the photography industry. I worked in sales, and I worked in that field for about a decade. Got to a point where unless I was going to learn photography and do something with it, there was no further way for me to advance in the company. And I didn't really want to there wasn't really anything else that appealed to me at that point in time as starting over in a career.
Yeah.
So I remember being on vacation. I was actually out in Arizona, in Sedona, Arizona, in the mountains. And I stopped in one of the little shops that was in Upper Sedona that was a Bath Junkie franchise. And I thought it was the coolest thing I had ever seen. You could walk in, there were all these empty bottles on the shelves, and you just picked the bottle you wanted, took it up to the shelf, picked your fragrance, picked your color. And as a girl especially, and because I was with a group of girls, we thought that was just the most amazing thing that could ever exist on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
So when I got home, I started researching their franchises and what kinds of requirements they had to get into that kind of industry. And I learned it was really expensive. I learned that franchises were really expensive, and that being a franchise owner isn't necessarily the same as being a business owner, because you still have someone standing over your shoulder telling you what to do and what to sell and how to sell it. So I started researching how to do it on my own. And once I started doing that, I realized that I could probably do the same thing at a fraction of a franchise cost.
Mm-hmm.
So weirdly enough, I was researching vendors, and one of the vendors I researched happened to be selling their business, and the rest is history.
Wow. Now, what kind of advice would you have for a cosmetic chemist, either who's just getting started in the industry or maybe who has this idea to start their own line? What kind of advice would you have for them?
I absolutely say go for it. Don't get discouraged. There are a lot of skincare companies out there, but in my experience, there aren't a lot out there that are owned by chemists. So I think that there's definitely an advantage. One, you don't have a lot of the same startup costs. You don't have to hire an outside chemist, mm-hmm. which is extremely expensive. There are a lot of things, but I would also say if you're thinking that you're going to become a cosmetic chemist with the intention of starting your own business, get a business degree or at least take some business classes. Because it's not, as I said before, you don't just walk in and sign a check and take over. There are a lot of other things involved. It helps to have very strong people with business backgrounds, either as advisors or to have somewhat of a business background yourself, because it takes more than one person to steer a boat.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, Allison, and good luck in all your formulating work out there in Cleveland.
Thank you very much, Perry. Thanks for having me today.
One of the goals of this podcast is to get you to be more innovative. To that end, we're going to provide you with a question that can help you come up with the ideas for cool new products. So it's simple. I'll pose a question and you take 10 minutes or so to come up with answers to the question. Those answers will lead you to interesting new products. So today's question. If water suddenly became scarce and you could only use 10% maximum in any formula you create, how would that change products like shampoos, skin lotions, and other aqueous-based formulas? So give that question a think and come up with at least 10 ideas at how products will be different. So the question again, If water suddenly became scarce and you could only use 10% in any formula you create, how would that change products like shampoos, skin lotions, and other aqueous-based formulas? Well, that's our show for today. We'll be back next week with another show and interview. Just a few quick announcements. I'm going to be emceeing the Midwest SCC's Fall Technical Symposium on October 26th. It promises to be an excellent show on open innovation. So if you're in the Chicagoland area, or you can get here, it'd be a great opportunity to learn more about open innovation. Also, look for your ballots for the national SCC election, and be sure to vote for the new VP-elect and your area director. Voting is important, and it's the only opportunity you get to get your voice heard in the SCC. Finally, if you have any questions and comments about cosmetic science or the show, go to chemistcorner.com and leave your feedback there. Also, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and feel free to connect with us on LinkedIn. To find out how to do that, just go to the About pages on Chemist Corner for more details. All right, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Now, go make a difference.